copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
We're going to ask now is the question, can the Old Testament be trusted historically? I want to begin with a page. What do you think the page is of? Well, it's an old Bible. It's in fact a 400-year-old page of Bible. It's from the original King James Version, translation of 1611. It's a bit too small to read, so let's blow it up and make it bigger. In fact, let's make it even bigger. This comes from 2 Kings chapter 18. And what I want us to do is to read some of this together. By the way, what you'll see is that some of the shapes of letters are a bit different from what we're used to now. There is this thing that looks like a very tall C, which is in fact an S. But let's try and read it. Now in the 14th year of King Hezekiah, did Sennacherib, king of Assyria, come up against all the fenced cities of Judah and took them. Fenced means walled or fortified. And Hezekiah, king of Judah, sent to the king of Assyria to Lachish, saying, I have offended, I've done something wrong. Return from me, that means please go away. That which thou puttest on me will I bear, which means however much you fine me, I will pay. And the king of Assyria appointed unto Hezekiah, king of Judah, 300 talents of silver and 30 talents of gold. Doesn't mean he gave it, he said, this is the fine. And Hezekiah gave him all the silver that was found in the house of the Lord and in the treasures of the king's house. Then just two verses later, and the king of Assyria sent Tartan and Rabsaris and Rabshakeh from Lachish to King Hezekiah with a great host, that means a great army, against Jerusalem. And they went up and came to Jerusalem. And when they were come up, they came and stood by the conduit of the upper pool, which is in the highway of the fuller's field. This is someone who washes clothes. Why would I bring this to you? Well, it's a passage which was printed over 400 years ago, but it contains some particular historical claims. Particularly, it says there was a Judean king called Hezekiah, that all of the fortified cities of Judah were captured, all except for Jerusalem. That's what's clear in the passage. And that this was done by an Assyrian king called Sennacherib. That Sennacherib is particularly associated with a place called Lachish, and the rest of the passage will say that he fought against Lachish, and that he fined Hezekiah 30 talents of gold and 300 talents of silver. So these are the claims that we have within the text. And when we look at those, we find that they correlate rather remarkably with things that are known from history. But what we find is that, according to the text, whereas Sennacherib fines Hezekiah 30 talents of gold and 300 talents of silver, Hezekiah in fact gave all of the silver that was in his house, his palace, and in the temple. Why is he fined 30 and 300 and then gives all? Is it because all of the silver in his house and in the temple corresponded exactly to 300 talents of silver? Well, I want us to think about a man who became rather famous for conquering large parts of the world called Napoleon Bonaparte. Napoleon Bonaparte is said to be the person who began archaeology. He took experts round with him in his army, and that was around 200 years ago when he went to Egypt. That was the first time that people actually dug things systematically out of the ground. That means that our printed Bible was from 400 years ago, but archaeology didn't begin till 200 years ago. We then ask the question, if the printed Bible was produced without any knowledge of archaeology, that means all knowledge that is contained in that printed Bible can only have come through having been handed down from generation to generation in manuscripts. We then ask the question, how many of the things that they thought were the case have come to be confirmed by archaeology? What we find is that there are a whole number of Assyrian kings mentioned in the Bible. and I could name a number of them. We have figures such as Tiglath-Pileser the third. And what happened is, after archaeology began, in the 1840s, that was when Assyrian was deciphered. They then find Tiglath-Pileser III's own monuments, and they find that he is a real figure and at the right historical time. Or you could look at other Assyrian kings. There are, in fact, a series of five Assyrian kings mentioned in the Old Testament. People like Shalmaneser the V. Or we find that four of them are mentioned in a very specific order. One of them, Sargon, is mentioned in the book of Isaiah, and you can't be precisely sure where he fits in with the rest, but he more or less fits in the right place. But also Sennacherib, we find mentioned in the passage we've looked at, and then later Esarhaddon. So we find them. Now, why would I use this authoritative source of Wikipedia? The reason I use that is because Wikipedia was founded by an atheist, and I think it's very useful on all sorts of things, like if you want to find out about a place you're going to visit. On the other hand, on certain key things, such as the Bible, I find it to be less reliable, because I find it to be somewhat geared towards skepticism. Therefore, when we have the agreement that something in the Bible is true, it is because people have seen that there's such an overwhelming level of evidence they've had to concede that it is true. So we have five Assyrian kings, basically in the same order as they are mentioned in the Bible. So this is a really striking fact. But it's not just that we have kings from other countries mentioned in the Bible. We also have kings from the Bible mentioned in the records of other countries after archaeology begins. So we find many kings of Israel and of Judah are mentioned by these Assyrian kings too. You could come to the British Museum, a very grand building in London, where we have all sorts of stolen goods from the time before we lost our empire. And within those rooms, you can find the cartoons which Sennacherib had on his palace walls. These were pictures of how he had defeated people. And you'll find scene after scene. Here we have shields with people hiding behind them with arrows. And we have, of course, because they didn't have the technology to animate, the scenes run through like this. Down at the bottom, we have three people, Jewish people from Lachish, who are being impaled. This is the this is a picture of a city being sieged up there. That what he does is he portrays how he defeated Lachish. We also, there are three copies of this prism. And this tells, in Sennacherib's own words, what happened. This is what he says. As for Hezekiah the Judean, I besieged 46 of his fortified walled cities. Notice that phrase, almost the same as the one in the Bible. Fenced or walled cities. I conquered them and took out 200,150 people. He himself, I locked up within Jerusalem, his royal city, like a bird in a cage. Now this is what is called spin, putting a positive light on something. You see, he didn't actually conquer the city. But how can you say, I didn't conquer the city? Respectably, you say, I shut up Hezekiah like a bird in a cage. Ah, but Sennacherib, you didn't get into the cage, did you? Hezekiah was overwhelmed by the splendor of my lordliness, and he sent me 30 talents of gold, 800 talents of silver. Now, you remember in the Bible, it was 30 talents of gold, and 300 talents of silver was the fine. But then Hezekiah gave all of the silver that was in his house and in the temple. Now, I find the agreement on the number of talents of gold an amazing, striking thing. And I find that far more striking than the disagreement on the amount of silver. Now, you could explain the differences on the amount of silver by saying that either text A or text B has a copying error, or that one of them is wrong and is exaggerating or diminishing, or that they are talking about slightly different things. One is talking about the amount of the fine, the other is talking about the amount that was actually given. Those are all possible. But the thing that I find really striking is that we have this text which says in the Bible, 30 talents of gold was the fine, and then after archaeology begins, And then Assyrian has deciphered an account correlating to exactly that. Now, I don't know of other historical records where a detail as precise as that has been confirmed by archaeology over that period of time. We again remember this verse, which talks about Tartan and Rabsaris. Now, in Hebrew, Tartan is spelt with a short A, Tar, and then a long A, Tan. And that's the way it's been preserved in Hebrew. Then what happens is people decipher Assyrian or Akkadian. And there's a big long dictionary. This is the Assyrian dictionary made in Chicago. And you can see that there's one volume just for T. There's also another volume just for T with a dot underneath. But if we just take the concise version of this, there's something actually made in Cambridge, the Concise Dictionary of Akkadian, you can see that it says Tartanu means second in command. So even the vowel length is exactly the same, that they have preserved this and it's been deciphered and it's found to be the case. Or when it says later, or in another volume, that Rab is the word for a chief or overseer. It's a bit like our word rabbi. One of the things you find is this, that the Bible has correctly handed down Assyrian words, even though the scribes who handed down the Bible almost certainly didn't know Assyrian because it was a defunct language. And handing down correctly the phonetics of words in languages that no one speaks anymore is actually a very impressive feat. Or another detail you have in the Bible, that Hezekiah did waterworks. He made a pool. He made a conduit for water and brought water into the city. Again, something which subsequent archaeology, discoverer of the Siloam Tunnel, has been rather interested in. Now, if we take a Bible from between about the year 1700 and the year 1800, we find that commonly they began to put dates in the margins. Here is a Bible from 1785. And we see that when it dates the fall of Samaria to the Assyrians, it says that it happened at before Christ in the year 721. When we look at what has been thought after archaeology began, we actually find in Wikipedia that it says that it believes this happened around 722. Well, what is so surprising? The King James Version and other versions that were produced in Europe were produced on the basis of Hebrew editions. One of the main Hebrew editions was made in 1525. But the earliest manuscripts available for that Hebrew edition were from no earlier than the year 1100. And then we find that their information has been handed down to 1100 AD or later, from around the year 700 BC. So in other words, we're talking about 1800 years of being transmitted through manuscripts. And we're finding highly accurate information. The Assyrian kings' names are spelt correctly. So what we could say is, I could go to an ignorant monk sitting in his cell somewhere in the Middle Ages, before the Reformation, before the Renaissance, copying a Latin Bible, and I could say, tell me the names of the Assyrian kings, and he would look in his Latin Bible and he would give you a fairly accurate rendering of their names. I would say, tell me, O monk, when did those kings live? And he would do his sums and would give me a rough date for when they lived, which would basically be correct. So how can that monk, sitting in isolation in his cell, copying out Latin Bible manuscripts, correctly have information, historical information, from so much earlier? This is an amazing thing and shows that what we have through the Bible is something that has been trusted, and that trust has been vindicated. But I want to ask a question. What's the most advanced? Is it the ancient Babylonian clay tablet? Or is it the leather writing of that medieval monk, or is it a modern phone? Well, we might think that the most advanced is the one on the left. It seems to have the ability to send information round the globe so much more quickly. This seems the least advanced. It's chunky, it's got 600 signs, it's so complicated. This is lighter, and you have fewer letters. Perhaps this is more advanced than that, but that's the most advanced on the left. But then you ask the question, which lasts the longest? Well, how many of you are using a mobile phone that you had 5 years ago? One person. Well, do take pity on that person. What we find is they don't last very long. Hard disks don't last very long. But we know that books, paper, can last for hundreds of years. Leather can last for hundreds of years. And we know that clay tablets can last for thousands of years. But then you ask yourself the question, what contains the oldest text? Actually, the oldest text could be on your phone. This could be a late Babylonian tablet. You could have the text from an old Babylonian tablet on your phone. So what we've got to recognise is that the Bible has come to us through a culture where they had an advanced writing system. It was to write on perishable material such as papyrus or leather. And we know that not just because it's perished, but also because we have leather preserved in the Dead Sea Scrolls in jars, or because we have the fibre marks from papyrus on the back of seals that were put on letters. We know they wrote on perishable material that does not survive except in extraordinary circumstances. But as a result of that, we might think that that means the text is young. But in fact, the text can be very, very old on that material. It could be just as old as the things on the clay tablets. So whereas we can go and see clay tablets in museums and think, wow, that's old, we can't see Bibles that seem to be quite that old in museums. And so some people think that means the Bible is young. But that's simply committing a basic fallacy about the material that people wrote on. I would want to suggest that the Old Testament, when they wrote on perishable material using a 22-letter alphabet, was actually a very advanced thing to do at the time. And we have to remember that the whole of our society is built on copying. When we hear someone's voice on the phone, we don't actually hear their voice, we hear a copy of their voice. In fact, a copy of a copy of their voice. In fact, a copy of a copy of their voice many, many times repeated before it got to you. Every file we download is a copy. Everything that we see on TV is a copy. We have great, great confidence in copying in our society. Now, people say, couldn't someone have miscopied the Bible? I want to put it like this. We know that it's technically possible that you could be watching a sports match on your TV and someone could have falsified the image that you saw. They have computer generation where they could make it so you're seeing something completely different from what your neighbour is seeing. That is possible. But the reason we think they're not doing that is we know that they would need a very big budget in order to get enough programmers to do that. But it's exactly the same with miscopying the Bible. You see, it takes about a year to write a Bible out. That's a big investment of time. If you write a Bible on leather, think how many animals you have to kill to have the number of animal skins you need for a Bible. It is big budget business. And so actually, the economics of it suggest that this is not what's happened. The most natural belief is simply that it's a copying culture where they hand things down. You remember in the days of Jesus, there were many scribes. It was their job to hand things down. There have always been scribes in a culture like that. And what we see when we look at a passage like 2 Kings chapter 18 is really, really precise information that has been handed down over thousands of years with utter accuracy. Now, we cannot prove everything in the Bible to be historically true. If we had we only believed it if we had corroboration for each part of it, we would not be believing it. If I said to my wife, she said she's been for a walk, I say, can you prove that? I'm saying, I don't trust you. Actually, I can prove many things that my wife claims, but many other things, I simply trust her word for it. Similarly with the Bible, there are some things that have really been shown to been handed down over a long period of time, and there are many things that have not been shown that way, but it is rational to trust that they've been handed down. It's one thing to prove something to be historically true. I'm not saying I can prove it to be historically true. I'm saying it is very rational to trust and believe that it's historically true. Thank you very much for listening.